It's Thursday, May 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hi, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up.
They were expected to uphold the rules that keep soccer honest and to protect the integrity of the game. Instead, they corrupted the business of worldwide soccer.
Swiss authorities arrest top members of football's world governing body on indictments by U.S. prosecutors. Also ahead, residents in India seek shelter against record heat. We speak with Human Rights Watch on the continuing plight of migrants in Southeast Asia. And it's country music time. It's all next on International Edition. Football's world governing body, FIFA, is now playing defense after authorities in Zurich, Switzerland, arrested seven of its officials Wednesday, pending extradition to the United States. U.S. authorities were carrying out more search warrants Wednesday in Miami, and the Justice Department said another four individuals and two corporate defendants have already pleaded guilty in the case. U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch says lies, corruption, and bribery have plagued football's governing body for over two decades. Lynch spoke at a news conference Wednesday in New York as federal charges were unveiled against 14 people in a sweeping investigation of FIFA.
These individuals, through these organizations, engaged in bribery to decide who would televise games, where the games would be held, and who would run the organization overseeing organized soccer worldwide.
Lynch called the allegations rampant, systematic, and deep-rooted corruption that profoundly harmed a multitude of victims. The U.S. indictment includes 47 counts against current and former top officials covering charges of racketeering, wire fraud, and money laundering in a scheme that prosecutors say involved sports media executives paying or agreeing to pay millions of dollars in exchange for marketing rights to tournaments. Meanwhile, Swiss authorities are conducting a separate investigation into allegations connected to the awarding of the 2018 and 2022 World Cups. Chris Eaton is the executive director of Sport Integrity at the International Institute for Sport Security in Doha, Qatar. He and VOA's Jeffrey Young talked about the arrests.
The U.S. jurisdiction has a great deal of strength in this area because it's able to track the movement of monies, particularly U.S. dollars, in any transaction around the world, which gives them jurisdiction. This is one of the unique issues of international jurisdiction that the U.S. enjoys. And we're very pleased to see, finally, that these allegations are in some way taken to the right judicial area so we can see the truth finally come out.
In the awarding of the 2022 World Cup to Qatar, there was a swirl of controversy and allegations that a very wealthy Qatari spent some $65 million of his own money rounding up the votes to ensure that his country, Qatar, would indeed land the cup in 22. Is there any connection to that incident to what is going on here with the Swiss authorities and the Department of Justice?
Well, there isn't any obvious connection yet. Maybe there is when this investigation is only early in the U.S., and I'm sure that it's the beginning of the charges that will come out of their investigation. But the Swiss authorities announced themselves an investigation into both the 2018 and 2022 bids and allegations of corrupt payments to some people. So we finally now have some judicial and law enforcement action where we'll see the truth come rather than allegations only in the media and the sorts of things that have happened in the past, which is trial by media. We now need to see, and good to see, trial by real judicial competence.
You say that this has been going back some time. Give me a little bit of a timeline in the action that's just taken place. How far back are authorities looking in compiling the charges against both the FIFA officials and the former FIFA officials and also the sports marketing executives? What's the timeline on this?
I understand it goes back to the early 1990s, but perhaps the larger amounts are in the 2000s and beyond. So we're looking about a 20-year timeline really here, and that's a shocking timeline, quite frankly, to be laid dormant for so long and waiting for some sort of legal action like this in a jurisdiction like the USA.
I notice with some interest that this coming Friday, Sepp Blatter, who is the head of FIFA is planning to run for the presidency again. This is his fifth term. An amazing coincidence? What is this?
You mean the timing of the arrest? No, I don't think so. I think the fact is that the U.S. authorities need to find a way in which they have addressed the full numbers of people that were associated with FIFA that were suspect and they want to investigate and to take legal action against. Today, they are all in Switzerland, in the one location. It made logical sense for them to take the action they took. The timing is irrelevant, really. The fact is that they're all in the same place at the same time.
How does this action, both by the U.S. Department of Justice and Swiss authorities, how does this speak to the integrity of FIFA as a sport organization?
And more importantly, what it speaks about is this very opaque and shadowy organization. Its structure is just not suitable in the international business environment of today. FIFA is a very old, antiquated structure, and it's creaking under its own opaque weight. Now, we've had so many scandals over the last 10 years at FIFA. It's really time for a complete reformation of the organization to make it more in tune with the realities of business competence today.
We're going to spend about 2 minutes of stoppage or injury time looking at social media on this topic. With me in the studio is Michael Lippin. Hi,
Michael. Hey, Jim. How's it going?
Good. This is a big topic in social media.
It is. FIFA is one of the most talked about topics on Twitter right now worldwide. Analytics website Topsy says the acronym FIFA has been tweeted at least 875,000 times in the past day in all languages.
Amazing. How does that compare to the typical usage of the word on Twitter?
Well, FIFA is generally a widely tweeted topic, which is kind of understandable given that it supervises the world's most popular sport. Topsy shows that over the past month, FIFA was tweeted about 50,000 to 90,000 times a day. And then we saw this enormous spike to more than 800,000 tweets today. That works out to about 30,000 an hour.
Wow, that's amazing. What particular tweets about FIFA have been getting a lot of attention online?
Well, one tweet that resonated online is from a 27-year-old Brazilian actor, Felipe Neto, who has more than 3 million followers. Writing in Portuguese, he said, FIFA and the Brazilian Football Confederation have been controlled by bandits for many, many years and never did anything about it. Thank you, FBI. Now, that tweet has had more than 200 retweets and 500 favorites. The reason he singled out the Brazilian Football Confederation is probably because one of the FIFA officials arrested in Zurich is the former Brazilian president of that confederation, José Maria Marin.
Now, you were also telling me earlier that well-known journalist Piers Morgan has also been weighing in on this. What did he have to say?
Well, Piers Morgan, a British journalist and former talk show host on CNN, had some fun at FIFA's expense. He tweeted this kind of mock breaking news headline: Swiss police confirmed that when arrested, all seven FIFA officials threw themselves on the ground and pretended to be injured.
Pretty good one-liner there. Thank you, Piers Morgan. And thank you, Michael Lippin, for joining us in the social media component of this big story. This is VOA.
Hi there. This is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hitmakers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. A searing heat wave has been sweeping large parts of India. It has killed more than 1,100 people, mostly in southeastern states. Anjana Pasricha tells us more from Mumbai.
As temperatures crossed or hovered around 46 degrees Celsius across the vast plains of India, those who had a choice remained indoors to escape the killer heat. But tens of thousands, such as construction laborers, taxi and auto rickshaw drivers, and street vendors, could not afford to escape the scorching sun. The death toll has climbed steadily in the past week. The bulk of the deaths have occurred in the neighboring southeastern states of Andhra Pradesh and Telangana, which have recorded the country's highest temperatures. YK Reddy, the head of the Meteorological Department in Hyderabad, told VOA it is the worst heat wave to hit the region in nearly a decade.
In this summer season, three records are broken. I mean, at three places, the temperatures have overshot the previous records.
Although high temperatures are common in India in May and June, Dry, scorching winds blowing from the northwest have intensified the heat in the past week, not just in Telangana and Andhra Pradesh, but all across northern and central India. That includes the capital, New Delhi, where a national daily showed a photograph of street tar and paint on the stripes of a pedestrian crossing melting. Authorities across the worst-affected states advise people to stay indoors during the afternoon, not to venture out without caps, and to drink plenty of fluids. In some places, such as Andhra Pradesh, they cancelled the leave of doctors as hospitals were flooded with cases of heat stroke. In the eastern city of Kolkata, the death of two taxi drivers due to heat stroke last week prompted taxi unions to tell cab drivers that they could turn down passengers in the afternoon. Many cabs in Indian cities are not air-conditioned. In the eastern state of Odisha, the government advised labourers to suspend hard work between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. The arrival of annual monsoon rains at the end of the month or early June could bring some relief from the sweltering heat. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Mumbai.
It's 16 minutes past the hour. We pause for a brief look at the day's news.
And here are the headlines from VOA. U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch says corruption and bribery has plagued football's governing body, FIFA, for over two decades. Lynch spoke at a news conference in New York as federal charges were unveiled against 14 people. The Kremlin Wednesday refused to comment on a Western journalist's report of a huge Russian military buildup near the Ukraine border. Asked about the likelihood of a Russian invasion of Ukraine, a Russian spokesman said his ministry had no immediate comment. An international human rights group says the militant group Hamas committed war crimes during last year's conflict with Israel. Amnesty International accuses Hamas of kidnapping, torturing, and killing Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And the Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says Islamic State militants have executed 20 men at the Ancient Roman Theater in Palmyra. I'm Dave DeForest, VOA News.
You're listening to International Edition. As Malaysian authorities cleared dozens of grave sites and suspected people smuggling camps, Human Rights Watch accused government officials in four Southeast Asian countries of being complicit in the brutal treatment of migrants from Bangladesh and Myanmar, also known as Burma. VOA's Victor Beatty spoke with Human Rights Watch Deputy Asia Director Phil Robertson about the allegation of official complicity in northern Malaysia.
That area is a security area. It's not an area where people can just come and go as they please. And obviously there must have been officials who knew about this on both the Thai and the Malaysian side. What we've seen in Thailand so far is the arrest of local political officials, people at the sub-district and the village level. We've also seen police under suspicion, both at the district level and up to the provincial level. We think that there's probably higher level links involved as well. We also note that the military so far, which was very present in those areas, has not come under suspicion, which is a bit worrying to us because we think that there should be accountability for all people involved, regardless of what service they are in or what their rank is. On the Malaysia side, the government has cast the light on forestry officials, reflecting that this is a forested area. But I would be surprised if they're not only forestry officials involved, but also I think that they're probably police and immigration and other people who may have been involved as well. And I think that the Malaysian government, like the Thai government, needs to cast a wider net if they're really going to get to the bottom of official complicity in, with these trafficking rackets.
Human Rights Watch estimates between 3,000 and 4,000 people may still be aboard these ships adrift at sea, some of them for months. You have some firsthand accounts after interviewing some of these people.
Yes. Well, we spoke to a number of people who were able to reach Thailand. And what we found was worrisome situations, not only in terms of how they were, in some cases, forced onto boats by thugs or vigilantes, but also how they were treated on board. The real deprivation that the men, women, and children on these boats faced, you know, the lack of food, the lack of any sort of sanitary accommodation, you know, being stuck below decks for months on end, essentially crammed into these boats like sardines, really shows how heartless and cruel this trade is. You know, it's particularly worrisome that the Thai government is now not permitting the U.S. Navy to help with surveillance, particularly in Thai territorial waters. We've been informed that the Thai government is saying that their 12 nautical mile limit is off limits to any sort of search and rescue craft from the U.S. who are seeking to help try to find the remaining boats. That really raises some fundamental concerns about what the Thai officials might be trying to hide.
Will this tragedy, as horrific as it has been, perhaps be a watershed development for the Rohingya with regard to the improved treatment and attention?
Well, I hope so, but that's going to require a major push from the international community, particularly countries like the United States, members of the European Union, Australia, and others, supporting the frontline states like Thailand, Malaysia, and Indonesia to demand that Burma change its policies to, end the systematic human rights abuses against the Rohingya people in Arakan State that has left, over 800,000 of them stateless and hanging on for dear life in very difficult situations in Arakan State. The government of Burma is still in denial. They're still claiming that there's no problem. And as I said, they're trying to cast aspersions at the problems here are all about traffickers from outside the country coming in to try to entice people to leave. The Burma government really is showing its repressive tendencies when we look at the issues of the Rohingya. It shows really that the sort of reform process in Burma has not gone half as far as many people think it has.
And Phil Robertson says information his group has indicates Myanmar security officials have been involved in taking money to allow boats operated by human smugglers to depart. He suspects Bangladeshi officials may also have taken part. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
A pair of country music veterans return to the studio, tragedy at a Trace Adkins show, and Luke Bryan is kicking up the dust on tour. VOA's David Byrd and Nikki Strong hang out in the studio to talk country music.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and I'm here with Nikki Strong. We're talking country music. Let's start off, Nikki, with a couple of veterans of country music, Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson.
Yes.
They have a new album out called Django and Jimmy.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about it.
So Django and Jimmy, the album is going to be released June 2nd. So, and it's in honor of their two respective heroes. So Django Reinhardt, who is considered one of the best guitar players in the world.
Right.
And one of Willie Nelson's biggest influences. And then you have Jimmy Rogers, which is country music's first superstar.
Right.
And pioneer of the genre itself.
And someone to whom Merle Haggard has credited his love for country music, for
yes.
listening to his songs.
Yes, he actually did a whole album in tribute to him. So, and what's really good is that both Willie and Merle are good friends.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be good synergy. It's going to be good music. And they got together back in 1983 with Poncho and Lefty.
And Lefty, sure.
Yes, so this is a long time coming. So
wow.
I'm looking forward to hearing what they have in store. They also, on the CD, have a tribute to Johnny Cash.
Mm. Now, I understand both were really good friends with Johnny Cash, and they all had their Johnny Cash stories,
yes.
and so they sat down and wrote this tune about him.
Yes.
And Johnny Cash, of course, died a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
so he's
mm-hmm.
another pioneer of country mm-hmm. music and of rock and roll, too.
Yeah, yeah. I love the fact that they're two legends in their own right, paying tribute to legends.
Now, they have a song on this album called It's All Going to Pot.
Yes, they do.
Smoking some weed in the
yes,
studio, were they?
Of course. If it's Willie Nelson.
Okay. Well, now, see, most people associate country music with drinking.
Willie has been very forthcoming with it, and even with this song, you know, and the video. They're very much like, light it up and let's go for it. And I think in light of everything that's happening in terms of legalization of marijuana, they're like, hey, let's sing about it. What the heck?
There was a slight, there was a bit of sad news. There was a Tennessee man who was arrested after running over some people at a Trace Adkins concert. Now, apparently this fellow had a little bit to drink.
Yes.
He was a vendor.
Yes.
And got into a dispute with somebody and then decided to run over them.
Well, what was crazy, he got into a dispute and then he went back to his SUV to get a gun, actually. This is what witnesses are reporting.
Mm.
And then he got into his SUV and then drove it into a crowd of people who were, you know, hanging around after the concert.
Wow.
Went right into a field. And it took someone else driving their Jeep into him to stop.
Wow.
Yeah. So one person died.
He has been arrested. This fellow has been arrested and is facing some pretty serious charges.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Luke Bryan.
His
album Crash My Party had 6 number one singles on it. It earned him 2 Entertainer of the Year awards.
Yes.
He's got a new one out called Kill the Lights, and we've got the first tune from that.
Yes, the CD Kill the Lights is set to be released Friday, August 7th.
Mm.
And he is really on fire right now. He has a new exhibit at the Country Music Hall of Fame that opened last week, highlighting his career. And he's kicking off the Kick Up the Dust tour right now. So in honor of the tour and in honor of just some good country rocker music, this is Luke Bryan's latest.
All right, it's called Kick the Dust Up. And if you have any comments or questions, you can always log on to our website. That's www.voanews.com. That's where you can also find Nikki's show.
Yes.
And we welcome your comments. Thanks for listening.
Kick the dust up. Back it on up. Feel your cup up. Let's kick the dust up.
You've been listening to International Edition. You, of course, can find us at our website, voanews.com. Our special thanks to Director Tracy Carter and Engineer Aydin Utku. I'm Jim Stevenson. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The governments of the United States and Lao PDR presented a multilateral wildlife trafficking workshop in Vientiane from May 6th to 8th. The workshop included investigators and prosecutors from Indonesia, Lao PDR, Malaysia, Thailand, and Vietnam. Ambassador Daniel A. Clune of the U.S. Embassy in Vientiane and Director General Kamput Pandanuvong of the Lao Department of Forest Inspection opened the workshop on May 6th. In his opening remarks, Ambassador Clune highlighted the importance of the participants' work. Wildlife trafficking is a serious concern, with illicit proceeds estimated at $8 to $10 billion annually. Increasingly, wildlife trafficking is intertwined with other illicit activities that undermine national security and economic prosperity. Combating wildlife trafficking requires collaborative actions and cooperation. The Laos Wildlife Trafficking Workshop is the third in a series of regional wildlife trafficking law enforcement workshops supported by the United States Department of State's Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, or INL. The first workshop was held in Bogor, Indonesia, in May 2014. The second was held in Hanoi in November 2014. The workshops provide an opportunity for officials from participating countries to discuss policy, information sharing, and enforcement issues. Ultimately, the workshop offers participants an opportunity to improve regional cooperation to combat wildlife trafficking and other illicit activities of transnational criminal organizations. These workshops are just one aspect of the strengthened commitment of the United States to support efforts to stop wildlife trafficking and protect endangered species around the world. In July 2013, President Obama signed an executive order that resulted in the first U.S. national strategy for combating wildlife trafficking. The strategy incorporates the efforts of over 17 U.S. government agencies and sets 3 strategic priorities: strengthening enforcement, reducing demand, and building international cooperation. We're proud to be able to work together with our Lao partners on endeavors such as these, said Noah Gieseman, acting director for the INL section at the U.S. Embassy. The Department of Forest Inspection has been extremely supportive, he said. We hope that all the participants will be able to use this three-day workshop to build a stronger network of partnerships across Southeast Asia, and that our nations can continue to work together against wildlife traffickers and transnational crime.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.